All right, you guys, on this episode, it is the holidays. We are talking a little about some travel tips for training. Jesse just and I just happen to be wearing our, you can't see any of these, got these, the Travelers from Strike. These are my favorite shoes to travel in. Not sponsored, even though that sounded like a sponsor.
Yeah, it did sound like a sponsor.
They're just so
comfy. We'll reach out to Mark.
Shout out. We are talking about our travel tips, training in the airports. What's the best training technique for the airports? And a ton of travel tips for training in transit on the plane. So some good hacks there. Justin finds some pigeons in the bathroom on the flight.
I think he brought them, actually.
And horses in the back.
Yeah.
We talk about back squats and how to optimize your back squat for range of strength, the value of range of strength. If you don't know what that is, skip to the end or listen all the way through. And then our holiday plans. All this and more on this valuable episode of The Outrun Show. Love on the back.
Thick of a heel.
Yeah.
So I do find that this heel needs to break in a bit. It's kind of stiff. Whereas the last ones were like good to go from start. Yeah. But these ones you kind of need to break in a little bit.
They do feel a little roomier. I would say that the felt ones that I had in the past felt a little more cozy. Did you have the felt ones? They felt super cozy.
But yeah, they just got so dirty. I had to.
Yep.
I was just like, I got to retire these.
I spilled cooking oil on them. When that never came off, so it just looked like I was walking around with these filthy shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's like the dark stain on the top. Mm-hmm. Grossness. Yeah. Well, this episode The Outrun Show is sponsored by Senzu Beans.
Senzu Beans. What you got there, Jesse?
Some Dragon Ball Z Senzu Beans. Some candy.
Beans.
It's beans.
You can buy Senzu Beans online. We're testing out to see if there is any sort of like nootropic effects.
Yeah, I'm eating multiples of them, so hopefully their effects stack.
Yes.
Also can't chew them like they did in this show.
Well, they were crunchy in the show.
Yeah, but those aren't crunchy, those are rocks.
Yeah,
they're impossible.
That's what's good. You gotta give the sensu bean juices time to soak into your bloodstream.
What do they call that? It's like time lapse. There's a term for that when you buy a pill that can dissolve.
Oh. Yeah, we got time for some come to me.
Yeah, okay. You're right. Time release.
Yeah, no, there's an actual term for it. Really? It's not lozenge. It's like, that goes into your tongue.
Yeah.
And then they sit there.
Yeah.
There's a medical, or I guess a pharmaceutical term for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it will come to us.
Yes, I remember having to do it for my cats.
Put stuff under your tongue?
Yeah, squirt stuff into their cheeks.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah, the pain medicine does that.
Mm.
Huh.
Did you just crunch that?
Uh-huh.
See? We got Goku teeth.
Sends it me.
Do you guys, right now, one of my favorite videos to watch on Styles on TikTok is where they take, like, MMA fights and they just, like, edit over, like, their, animations.
The finishers?
Yeah, the finishers.
Did you send that to us?
I think a while back I sent you one, but I've watched
like they add like the key auras and stuff like that around them.
Yeah. Or like one edit somebody had yesterday was like some guy caught another guy's foot, and I don't know who the athletes were, and the dude throws a back kick to his like head, and he kind of like just is like knocked out and stunned with his arms out as he starts to fall over. So he just turns to ice and then like falls on the ground, and then he breaks apart.
Yeah.
Like I was like, dang, cool. Somebody put some time in on that, but it is cool. Or like they'll replace like the people's fists with like Thor hammers and stuff.
Yeah, I saw the Thor.
Dude, sometimes I come across those things and I'm like, wow, this guy was really bored.
Dude,
this girl was like, you know what, I'm just gonna edit this stuff because you know what, I got nothing better to do.
Yeah,
the talent on TikTok for free is just blowing my mind right now. Like those edits, they're made for like a little phone. And you just have to know so much to get them done. And no one's paying you. Like, if there was a budget for that, and, like, you went to some contractor or some company, some agency, and you said, yeah, I want to take these MMA fighters, and he's going to be, like, Thor, and this guy's going to be, like, Sub-Zero, this guy's going to be, like, Goku, They'd be like, uh-huh, yeah, and 10,000, okay, and 10,000, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah. And you'd come out, and they'd be like, cool, we can do that project for you. It's 40 grand. You know, yep. And someone just in their basement is like, look what I did. Doesn't even know that they could sell that skill set.
Well, I mean, if I'm being honest, they're probably rolling that stuff into some sort of portfolio. If they're being smart, they're... I mean, honestly...
Colin says no.
that's just on them. I've legit gone to a business that I've seen like a roof gap on and been like, I want to jump that roof gap, and then going to the business and asking like, hey, like, you guys have this really cool thing, I want to do it, can I do it, here's my Instagram. You can see that I'm a legit professional, and they can just scroll through my Instagram profile and see like my clips, and they'll be like, yeah, sure. Whereas, like, if I just went in, you know, you gotta bring some clout to the table.
That's a good idea.
Like, your profile is your clout, right? Like,
that's, right. It's true. So, and if you got midday clout, that's legit.
So if you just put all that stuff on your TikTok profile, all your cool edits, and then you go for a job interview, you can just pull it up on the table and be like, "Yo, check out all those stuff I've done."
Yeah, you'd impress me.
That's and then you just watch the interviewer sit and go into a TikTok hole during the interview, and then you know you've got the job.
Just get the hypnosis TikTok, and then just be like, "I am hired. You are hired. Your pay is doubled. Your pay is doubled." Yeah. Sorry, guys. We got some background noise today with the garage doors and wind. The weather is Wyoming today. Mm-hmm.
It's very windy today.
A lot of people think Wyoming, they see Wyoming TikTok, and they think, like, Jackson Hole. They think, you know, national park, you know, bears and mountains and beautiful environment. Wyoming is a desolate plain that literally just has 60-mile-an-hour winds on it nonstop. Like, it just, you were like, why are there no, why is it the, like, wait, the lowest populated state, right?
Yeah, it's... There's only like a couple hundred thousand people.
Yeah, less than 500. So I think
it's
four-ish.
It's, yeah, there's.
And it's not small.
It's, no, it's not. It's very big.
Because there are really only certain parts of Wyoming that are actually inhabitable. And the rest is Mars. So all these people, like, they're like, oh, you know, Elon's moving to Texas. He should have moved to Wyoming if he wants to be so close to Mars. Because.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it is the least populated state.
Yeah. How many people?
450. But I want to say 30.
Let's see.
Wyoming population
is 579,000.
Oh, they've increased.
Must
have been those Californians, like everyone's complaining about.
Yeah, going from California to Wyoming is quite a culture shift there.
Yeah, but. Exactly.
But speaking of travel,
yes,
it's the we're coming up on the holidays now, the big holidays. Hey, sir, stop reading about Wyoming now.
TikTok hole.
You're trapped in the Wyoming TikTok. That won't last long. That's the only hole I would not be afraid of getting out of. It would quickly lose its allure. But travel.
But yeah, so are you guys traveling at all for the holidays? You're staying.
No, there's a pandemic. Just seemed like the right thing to say.
Yeah. I'm traveling, but not for the holidays, post holidays.
Where are you going?
Arizona.
Family?
No. Just we do have family in Arizona, yeah. But that's not the primary reason to head up.
What's in Arizona? This is news to us.
Cheap flights, cheap hotels, and it's warm.
That also the warm part that'll get me right about now since it's Wyoming outside right now.
Yeah,
it's pretty cold. So we had flights because we were gonna go visit Angus in Kansas City. So we were, and then this was back in April, and of course we had the big old closure, so we canceled those flights and we had to redeem them at some point. So we were like, well, let's just book somewhere random. So we kind of dartboarded the United States. And if it was cold, we dartboarded again. And ended up on kind of Arizona. So, yeah. So, we'll be in Phoenix for about a week or so.
Yeah. Very nice. You guys should head up. The drive to Phoenix to Flagstaff is, like, covering a couple different planets in, like, an hour drive.
We've driven to Arizona.
It's pretty crazy.
Many times. And I'm a flight guy. Like, I hate road trips. I think when I was younger, I didn't have a choice. Wow, that wind is extreme. And we are quite literally the broad side of a barn here. In fact, two broad sides of barns over here for the wind to just slam right into. So apologies for the background noise.
It literally shaking the garage door mechanisms. That's crazy. So, well, that's a good reason to fly out. So I'll wait for the wind to die down and you're going out. So when we travel, we're a bit weird in that you get really antsy in airports, and we know you're about to get on a long flight. Any flight feels like a long flight, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to stay active in airports. So the question is, how do you guys train in airports?
In the way that freaks people out the most.
Which is just about any sort of movement in an airport. Any movement
like sitting and walking, yeah.
They do not like.
It's I always call it the muggle shuffle when you get into like airports. So if you just like walk, you just see, especially when there's like lines of people waiting for the gate, it's like people just do this like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I call that the muggle shuffle. And it's I'm like, just depressing. Pick a direction and go. I don't care if that direction is the right direction or not, but like I'm like the guy in the crowd that's like leaning side to side trying to look over people. I'm like, is there something in your way? What's happening here? Like, as people just kind of mindlessly shuffle. So yeah, so if you do anything outside of the ordinary, that's kind of weird.
I really always wanted to do a handstand up the return. So when you get back from a flight and you land in Denver, mm-hmm. and you have that giant escalator after the
off the tram.
After the tram. I've always wanted to handstand up that whole time because everyone is so packed in there tight and no one walks. So you're sitting on that, you know, escalator for like a whole minute, it feels like. And I always wanted to just do a handstand so I could clear myself some room. Because people's not going to go underneath you if you're doing the handstand.
Which one are you talking about?
The big one, you know, where people wait with the signs after their family members get back. That escalator. Yeah, because it's ridiculously
very packed. You'd have a tough time getting in that position. Because people would try and pretend like you're not handstanding and then try and like push in on you, but then they would kind of have to. That just blows my mind about how people will ignore whatever's happening around them, no matter what it is, as if it's not happening. You see people do tricks, you see people do stunts, and people just walk by and it's not even looking at their phone. They're just like, they're highly aware of what you're doing, but they're trying to pretend like they're not involved or something. Just take a moment to be impressed. That's definitely
the business, like, New York crowd, I feel like. Yeah. That's where I saw it the worst. Where I literally could ask someone and talk to them and make eye contact and they just walk right past me. Right?
I'm that way. I've gotten that way with most random people.
But in New York, you have to be that way. You can't walk around New York when you pay attention.
Yeah, without getting accosted.
So I feel like it's a little different in Fort Collins. They don't get that as much. But at DAA, you'll certainly get it.
You have done the handstand on the conveyor, just not that conveyor.
Yeah, I've done handstand lifts.
Well, yeah, it was on the horizontal one, right? Yep. Not that tall
escalator. I think I've done one on an escalator, too. It's a little scarier knowing that it could eat me.
Yes.
Oh, dude, you just get to the top and it just chews your fingers.
It still freaks me out. Oh, yes. It's and basically then, a monster.
I think in BC, Jesse, you did the escalator slide at one point, I want to say. Maybe it was Singapore. I can't remember. But I remember you sliding down.
Oh yeah, down the side. I think that was Singapore.
On the silver side, yeah.
Because I think I remember Eric just cracking up.
Yes, and in Singapore you could have been like caned for that or something. Yeah. But surely the cameras had their eyes on you. After that,
is it just caning or is it a fine too?
I don't know. They're just really strict. Like
that's worse. You are.
In America to get a fine. Then just get a cane a couple times.
No, what's worse is getting caned and then having to pay
and
for
then
the cane.
A fine. Yeah, I don't even know if they still do
caning in Singapore. Like, I don't even know if that's a thing.
I think it's still on the books, but I don't think.
Yeah, we'll have to research that. Hey, we at Con, just side note, let's see if caning's still a thing in Singapore.
I think it's still legal, yeah, but you just. It's like, what is it? Like, it's illegal to own, like, an ostrich in Florida or some, like, those weird laws that pop up around that nobody's like actually looked at in some 60 years.
I think you can actually get caned in Singapore. I think it's a government punitive
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I think it's on the books, but I don't know if anybody actually does.
What's the verdict? It says it's a mandatory punishment for a bunch of really bad things, as well as foreigners who overstay by more than 90 days. I think that one's hilarious.
Like, you are now a partial citizen.
Yep. And that part of your flesh will stay here forever.
Yeah.
On this cane.
Yeah.
Spill your blood upon the soil.
Yeah. Yeah, I was always impressed in Singapore, like, you just don't see homeless people, you don't see anyone who doesn't seem like they're kind of part of the flow there.
Yeah, that's, like, in the city proper. We never really went outside of the city, but yeah.
That's true, yep.
Pretty much everybody's doing something.
We don't know. I kind of just think that they probably just ship people to Malaysia. They're just like, yeah, it's not working out, bye. So... other training in the airport. I always love to stretch before I get on the plane. So usually I'll be doing like pancake stretch, you know, mm-hmm. bow stance, horse stance. We were talking about the value of horse stance. One of the greatest things about horse stance is that you can pack it up and take it anywhere.
It is. If you brought both of your legs with you.
If you brought both.
Actually, of your legs. Even if you brought one, you could lean against the wall and technically still get into a horse stance.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I don't do horse stance as much. I feel like that one makes people think I'm in martial arts. If it's just horse stance,
I'll do. That's a good question. So like martial arts,
it's not the like, you know, I like, can't have your elbows tucked into the side. And that's what I feel like people.
Oh, you would chamber like yeah. chamber and then start just doing punches in the corner.
So I'll do like
I would laugh. I feel like I'll do like
75% splits, metal splits, and I have my hands on my hips, so no people don't think I'm like meditating or something. But
I still think that's horse stance.
Yeah, I mean, I would consider it, but...
But you're thinking, like, Karate you know... Kid. Yeah, Karate Kid.
Horse stance.
Which is horrible horse stance, actually. Mm-hmm. But there aren't any bad horse stances, but that's definitely one of them. You're thinking, like, yeah, like the Southern guys who do the thing with the fingers over to the elbows. And they shoot their fingers out. That would be great. In the airport? Yeah, security would be called real quick.
I've actually done quite a bit of stuff in an airport. I've never had the security called on me. One of my best friends jumping on the little golf carts and the lady yelling at him, doing double Kongs over the moving walkways, handstands, running up the down escalator. Yeah, I've never had this. I mean, well, I'm white, so.
Very hipster, non-threatening.
Short
guy.
So they're like, well, this guy's obviously not a threat to people.
Yeah, kid just over don't... there doing handstands.
Ma'am, I'm 30.
There is something about like the like energy of an airport that's so like for us, it's very energizing, right? Like when I get into an airport, I want to like trick on like the open areas and before the gate, I want to like flip off the benches and do all sorts of stuff, right? And I think it's like in reaction to the just oppressive, like muggle energy. That's
just a big open space too.
And there's just so much like, I mean, everything's built to just be sturdy there, right? So it's like, oh yeah, like everything can be climbed on in here, and everybody's so like weirdly depressed, even though the ability to travel is one of the coolest things that like humanity's ever made. And these people have the audacity to be sad in here. And so it's like a reaction to that. I think
everybody is really afraid of flying. So they're just like kind of anxious that way too.
Maybe. People are afraid of flying?
I think a lot of people are afraid of flying.
Oh yeah.
I would guarantee that like probably 90% of the people who are there are anxious about that flight.
There's a lot of people.
I bet it's the vast majority.
Really?
Just because of but not
those people
having
got into a car to get to the airport.
Right. It's not logical.
Which is like,
well, it's pretty logical.
100 times more likely to die in that. That
statistically, right. The data is the only thing that makes me feel good about it.
Wow.
But
yeah, I have no
guess. And then some acclimation. So more flying. The people who fly is part of commute and stuff too. Like they'll be really used to it. But in Denver, they have the like Aztec, you know, style. I always want to just like get in Indiana Jones, explore that.
That area is really cool.
Because they have, so like the train goes underneath and then around the outside it's built up and there's like stones and moss and stuff like that. And you just want to go and play on it.
Are you talking about DIA conspiracy theories?
DIA has very leveraged very well their conspiracy theories.
They've done a really good job with it. The talking gargoyle was awesome.
It talked?
You talked.
Yeah, there was a guy at the microphone on the other end.
No
just,
way.
Just dissed everybody who walked by.
Because they'd stop and they'd be like, and then they'd look at it, and then the guy would be on the speaker and be like, "What are you looking at?" Oh my god.
So there's all these conspiracy theories that DIA was built over some secret.
Yeah, underground complex
of
Illuminati headquarters or lizard people.
Yeah, it's like you'll find either Nazis, Illuminati, lizard people.
Gargoyles that are possessed. Yeah, the art is a little strange, but I think they're just doubling down on it because they think it's funny. It is funny.
I think part of it is we're just a little unaccustomed to the art from more indigenous people. Because the main mural that gets all the flack is some Mexican artist, and he had a very, very lengthy post about what each symbol meant. Mm. And so there's some very direct meaning behind all that. And I think when you look at it, you see a person in a gas mask with a gun, and people just start making assumptions. But
yeah, and what's tough is that really, usually when you have these big budget projects, art, that's the only time that art kind of makes its way into things, because there has to be a big enough budget, and it has to be usually a community project, which means some element of it needs to be dedicated to making sure that it's ingrained in the community.
Yeah.
And so that's the only time art can sneak in and get paid in a lot of ways.
That's true.
If we had just art budgets for society, which no one would endorse in this current climate, then yeah, you would end up with places where you could just go and experience art. You know, either museums or just in cities proper. Some of them do have programs like that, but
yeah, it's almost like the government has to inject it in. Like the city has all the painted electrical boxes, which I think is super cool. But you know, like that's where you get your art integration. Well, sad it has to be so forced, but
right, has no one ever like played like any of the simulators for building like societies, right? Like Sims, like those simulators.
There's no art.
There's like no art. Like no, it's like your culture. Like, but you get like certain points. Like your culture won't, or your society won't behave a particular way without artistic elements or libraries placed. I remember some games like that.
Really?
Yeah. Were you at where they actually wouldn't let you progress unless there was like a flourishing culture in your society? It wasn't just about. But now all those games are on mobile, and it's just like, how many tanks can you build to like annihilate the giants that are attacking your city on the backs of dragons?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
They get pretty intense. But speaking, so airports, we're digressing on the art now, but
what's your best airport exercise? Because I'm going to say it's horse stance.
Yeah, I'm usually doing front splits and side splits and handstands. I will do a B-twist and probably kick the moon if there's enough space.
You do some flip DC.
Yeah.
I pretty much just sleep.
That's also very rare, I feel like. Are you laying down when you're sleeping?
Oh, yeah.
On the floor?
I'll straight up sleep under the benches.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, my gosh, this guy, he's like sleeping.
Yep.
Yeah. But, I mean, I do a lot of pancake. Sometimes I'll do legs up the wall. Like, if I have an open wall by the gate, I'll just do legs up the wall. Nice. And then I put my backpack on my chest, and then I prop my phone up.
Oh, wow. I've seen that. You say he's not making this up.
Oh, yeah. Full like hood over, legs up the wall, like in the V, backpack on chest, hand up. Yeah, that's the way you kill long layovers.
Yeah, I think that you've got to hit the probably the hip flexors a little bit though too, because you're just sitting and you can't like get into that unless you can cross your legs in a plane. I got some longer femurs, but a little tougher, but it's going to be good to get that. I think, yeah, maybe the pancake and then like a split squat to open up the hip flexors, because you're gonna be sitting for some time.
Yeah, depending on your flight, and that's always like the worst part, is that you know you're gonna be sitting for so long, and athletes know how much damage that does. Like the next, almost it's like, I feel like it's a 48-hour window after your flight if you didn't prep properly, or not at least like getting up and walking around on the plane, that
dude,
you
so
feel
much
that effect.
Stuff that is happening to your body on a flight that's bad for you, that those long flights. So the last flight that we were on together was that Singapore flight, 16 and a half hours.
Yeah.
After a flight to like SF or LA, I can't remember which one it was, maybe it might have been SF from Denver.
Yeah.
And 16 hours. And I remember thinking to myself, I could just go insane here. This is nuts.
It is, yeah, it's a long time to be in, like, a dimly lit tube with, like, tons of other bodies, for sure. But I'm, like, a little guy, so, like, I just sit on the floor and cross my legs, and then I just use the chair to, like,
spin around.
Yeah, and until just, the, like, lady is like, hey, you gotta be in your seatbelt, in which case then I do the squat, and I buckle around my ankles. And then I fall asleep.
Right I've back. Never thought of using that to create, like a table for me to sleep on, but, yeah. The strap in.
Well, you might be a little too tall for it, but
I'm gonna try it next time for me for sure.
Definitely. I mean, you can't take this advice if you don't change your socks every day. But taking your shoes off in a plane is pretty amazing.
Yeah,
primo. But if you don't have a pair of socks for every day of the week, don't do it. I do not want to be near you.
Well, also, just like you could have a pair of socks for flight socks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good idea.
Mm-hmm. That'd be the kind.
But
thing
I also wash my feet every flight. To stretch my hip flexors.
In the seat. Oh, yeah.
What? Okay. This is why I don't touch those sinks. Like, I just know, man. It's like I'm all elbows in there, just like, I'll use a paper towel to touch everything in here. I mean, handstands washing his feet.
He did specifically say that he was washing them. He's not like, I just put my feet up
on
the
counter.
The bathroom
is the best place to stretch. Like,
yeah, but you're just
like,
in there doing pigeon. You know? In the sink. Like a pigeon.
Don't do it on the sink, though. Just take the baby changing station that goes over the toilet. You put that one down, and then you can go into pigeon on top of that guy and just prop your elbows up and, like, you know.
I always imagine people are just in there with IBS, and instead I'm waiting outside, and somebody in there, like, you trying to do yoga session. Yeah. Like a hot yoga
you
at
can't
the Mile
do
High
it
Club.
In the middle of the aisle. Like, it's just... So, I mean, sometimes I feel like I think I got permission to stretch in the, like, little flight attendant corridor section once. But, yeah, really, it's like, I don't want everyone staring at me while I'm stretching. So, and washing your feet feels amazing. I don't know if you've done that in the middle of the day.
My mind is blown right now.
You can't know that.
It doesn't surprise me.
Falling to sleep after washing your feet is just like, I don't know what it is about it, but it's
so
easy.
Hold on. Do you put your socks back on?
Yeah, I dry them off and put them back on. Yeah.
You didn't just, like, walk back to your chair with, like,
soggy socks.
No. Okay. Yeah, no, I do think, though, like, there are a ton of, like, tips on the flight for staying mobile, but they all involve other people looking at you weird. Mm-hmm. And look, that's just the price you gotta pay to walk off that plane.
That's right.
Feeling okay about, your body. Because otherwise, no. And people that are like, oh, no, I could fly 12 hours and, like, walk off the plane and feel fine are, like, the people who... like operate at 60% potential every day, and it's like, well, that's why you don't notice, because you don't live at your normal potential anyways.
There's no deficit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think horse stance would work on the plane too. I'm under leveraging it.
That's a power stance, dude. That's
just to tap a whole aisle. You just get up and you're just like,
what?
And just like,
I guess if you went back to the like little. Yeah, what would you call that?
Is there
the corridor for the flight attendants or something like that?
What do they call it? Yeah.
Quarters?
No. There's a name for it. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, if you go back there's usually like room.
Mm-hmm. If the attendants don't kick you out. What I have found is the real hack.
There's technically no rule that says you can't be back there.
They just don't want
to.
Because they want to do horse stance.
They want to do horse stance. Absolutely.
Like,
or they just want to talk shit.
I'm trying to talk shit about the lady in first class right now. Mm-hmm. I'm back here in economy.
In the back.
And with like, these fools.
I'm not. She's like, this is what I got to do with it. See, this is what. I got to be back here in economy with this guy doing a horse stance back here.
So I think that the real hack is just get into first class, right? I mean, where you just have like a bed or something.
Those beds are nice.
Yeah.
On those long flights, the ones that like, and you have your little tube. Those ones are great.
Only had it once.
Yeah.
Only had it once, and it wasn't a completely different flight experience.
Oh yeah, you're like, wow, this is enjoyable. If I could travel like this all the time,
I'd fly all the time.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
That's never true. Had it. Sounds great.
The train completely changes it. Yeah, it's like train.
Okay. The train was when we took our train from Seattle to Vancouver, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was. The most enjoyable travel I've had on a constrained cart or car.
Caboose?
Yes, or something, whatever.
And you were doing handstands in the aisle.
Yep.
And people were ignoring you.
Yes.
Like, they're sitting there, and you're doing a handstand literally adjacent to them, and they're just like, eyes forward, just dead set forward. Train's rocking, and I'm like, if it was me, I'd be like, hold on, I don't know how good your handstands are. Like,
take your feet out of here. I think this was before Snapchat. I'm sure it would have been on like TikTok. Someone would have been like, oh, this guy handstand on a plane.
Yeah. So, handstands work because the space is less, but then the bails are worse if you fall into a crowd.
That is, yeah. Like handstands on the plane, little risky if you hit like a bump or something, because there's no, you have forward. Mm-hmm. And you have backwards. Mm-mm. And that's it. If you go sideways, you're running into somebody. And somebody's going to get real mad at you.
Right.
And everybody's wound tight on the planes, dude. I swear. I'm like, dude, y'all need to loosen up, okay?
Yeah. Tell you, because they're all afraid.
You might be right about that. And that makes me so sad.
Yeah, very, very afraid. Even people have been on
flight. We're not even to the scary part of flight. Like, once we go into space, then you have the right to be afraid.
Yeah, because like there is no bailout.
No.
Right? There's no like, oh, we're gonna do a water landing and then like you get to go down a cool water slide. Like that doesn't happen in space, all right? There's no cool water slide. There's just endless vacuum of entropy.
Yep. That's sad.
I don't want to go to space though. But yeah. So on the plane, Justin's got pigeon in the bathroom for his
bathroom pigeon stretch.
Yeah, no, I mean if you're washing your feet, at least you stay and you're cleaning. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
But I'm gonna go with the ostrich aisle walk.
Wow. Have you done that? Have you actually done that?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like down the aisle doing
as
like
as long as your butt walk. Is to the front of the plane, you should be okay. But if you're doing it like walking to the pilots.
So you gotta be walking back.
Yeah, you need to be walking where people like aren't staring at your butt on the aisle.
I mean, I wasn't thinking of travel. Like you kind of get in a position where you're on the back where it's not that big of a deal. So you guys don't know. Place. Yeah. I guess doing a full just like trip, somebody has to lose a bet and do that one. Yeah. So the ostrich walk, you guys, is where like you're standing up, right? Yeah. No. So you would be standing up here, and you bend at the hips. Your legs lock out. You bend at your hips. You reach down underneath your feet, like you're stretching your hamstrings, and you start to like switch your booty, and
you cannot flex the knee. Facing
the front. And then you just come down, and you just start trotting like boom, 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 boom. Right. So in a plane, that's your butt is about.
You gotta be traveling backwards for that, because anybody that wants to like stare at your butt has to crane. And then it's obvious that they're staring at your butt, but otherwise it's just butt for like 15 meters down the aisle. That is a good one. Like that is the targeted areas you need to get, but yeah, you need to go back and like
so find acceptable if the direction is down is towards the carpet. Oh,
it's all acceptable. It's just which one's the most upsetting?
Okay.
Because there's like a threshold of how much upset you can, you know, of the atmosphere in the plane.
That's a good one. All right. So that one, and then yeah.
Mine's gonna be squatting on the chair.
Yeah. Squatting on the chair. It's pretty solid.
Yeah, so you just like you take your shoes off and you tuck your feet up. And you like actually get into that like bottom end squat, and then you take the belt and you run it around the front of your shins right by the ankle, and then you kind of tighten it up, and then you get yourself a nice little like squat position. Your knees are right there, so you can prop up like head on there. Perfect napping position. Yeah, it's great to rotate through. And then of course the flight attendants come by and they're like, hey, you need to put your seat belt on. It's technically on. Yeah. And then they just leave you alone.
Because they really don't. Because
they're like, I don't know what to tell him.
Yeah.
Because he's technically following all the rules. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then once your toes start to fall asleep, then you go back to sitting, and you do like the little cross-leggy thing. Mm-hmm. If you've got neighbors that are nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you just rotate. I like that one. That one's the best. If you have a hard time sleeping in a plane, try that.
The hack right there is the seatbelt. To hold the shins in. I never thought of that.
That's I learned that Kelly Strett has he has it across his lap, and he has you like
pin it.
Yeah, like square up your hips and then use the seatbelt to like latch them down so that you can relax after that.
Mm.
I never use it for that.
Some like active release therapy, ART, like you
press. No, like you
see it after. The hips in a neutral position rather than that like that tail tucked. the whole flight, right?
Yeah, so you get here, right, and you rotate the hips forward.
Yep.
So that your lumbar is not like pooping out your back.
Yeah.
And then you run the seatbelt across the top of that like issue wing. Yeah. And then you pin it down. And then from there, once it's like, it's got to be like tight though.
Yeah.
It's not like super uncomfortable tight because it's not sitting up here on your,
right,
like,
on your
intestinals
gut
or anything.
Right.
And then you pin it down and then you can just like relax and it'll pin your hips down.
Interesting. That's not bad.
Yeah, I never use it for that. I just use it for squatting or various.
Yeah. Because of the space of the island plane, you could actually get the split squat in, I think, too, which is something that I hadn't been using on flights before. I'm going to try that out next time. And I don't think it would be really intrusive as far as people are like, oh, he's stretching. That looks familiar to me, right?
Yeah. You definitely still have to be this way, though, which is like kind of the like awkward part is that if you're doing anything where like your butt is kind
of
sticking out.
Oh, you want to do it in the, like, you want to stuff your leg in front of the people sitting next to you.
No, like, guy in the middle seat has to take
half the quad.
No, I'm saying like in the aisle facing towards the back of the plane.
Yeah, okay.
Like, the benefit is nobody has the, like, discomfort of, like, this guy's, like, badonkadonk just hanging out here in the aisle. Because when you're in split squat, your booty pops, you know?
Yeah, but you know, some people might just be like, nothing's happening on this flight.
You get a little entertainment. All right. But if you flip around, you're facing the back, now you have the risk of eye contact.
Yeah. It's definitely a power stance, right? You're just like... Yeah. I like it.
So you pick your poison. People staring at your butt without your knowledge, or you make an eye contact with people while stretching.
So I think here I'm going to unpack a little bit for training tips, the horse stance, since I started thinking about it. Now, if you guys have done horse stance before, how many different like flavors? Usually the horse stance flavor depends on the discipline you're studying, right? So if you do yoga and they do horse stance, but what do they call it in yoga? Is there another word? There's got to be another word for it. Come, we look at horse stance and yoga. When you do it in martial arts, there you can kind of tell what style someone studies in order to, just by looking at the horse stance, you can kind of tell whether it's a Japanese style or you know, whatever the level is. And then now people are using them more and more in movement culture, you know, is in there. And then as I was reading
Sorry.
A little Midwestern slip in there. Yeah,
some belt a loader.
There you go. Just you're doing your horse stance in movement culture.
I
want
to try to pronounce it.
Ooh, do you know how to...
The one on the right.
Pronounce that?
That is Vatayananasana.
Vatayananasana?
Vatayanasana. Add an extra syllable there.
There's nothing sauna-esque about the horse stance. As a matter of fact, sauna would be the worst place to do a horse dance. But yeah, I'm sure that's a lot of A's. So the key takeaways are that if you're doing it for mobility, you can actually use the horse stance to help you get the splits. And that's the middle split. And that's a secret that a lot of people don't know is that here's the tip with that one. And I think this one I got a little bit from... I did see a yoga practitioner talking about this one. And then I've also seen it done by some of the mentors I've had in stretching. And that is to keep the crease of the hips below the knee in the position. And that is how you know that you're working on mobility versus just the isometric strength of holding horse stance. So if you do horse stance and you lock the legs out, you don't have the same stretch on the parts of the groin and pelvis that are going to get you that middle split. So oftentimes when you're training, and you guys ever training, if you look down, you'll see your hips are way above your knees. Doesn't mean it's not doing anything, but you can, in theory, get all the way down to like a middle split by training at the end range of motion, as long as your measure is, I'm going to keep the hips below the knees. And that works all the way down to like the last 10% of the middle split, which we all know is super...
the hardest part.
Right. And at that point, you no longer have that. Things are pretty much locked out. But that, and building your splits that way through the horse stance, is the difference between having like that... I think we call it a ballet split. But you guys know, like sometimes like girls are particularly this way. Or I've noticed that like heavier guys are this way, maybe just because more weight over the hips can just like fall into the middle split, but they can't control the different heights through flexion. So it's just like, boom, they can get to the end range, but if you're like, hey, hold it in the middle.
A and B, but yeah, nothing in between.
They don't have the strength. They don't have the controlled strength in between. So they don't. So they're more vulnerable there, and then they can't actually, in many ways, use that range of strength and movement as much.
Yeah, I spent a long time chasing middle splits, and then realized didn't really care that much. But
yeah, but you're at a certain point. Like I bet now, if you warmed up, you'd be at 90% split.
Yeah.
So a lot of people can't get their hips even in the horse stance to the height of their knees. No matter how narrow their feet are, they have to get almost into like an actual squat, like we would use a precision squat in parkour before then.
So you're saying horse stance in the airport, if you travel a lot, is your like your quick tip. You're like, you're prepping for the flight and you get in a little bit of middle splits like work on the outside.
I wouldn't wait for that to be the first time, because the delayed onset muscle soreness for the return flight would probably be pretty excruciating.
Yeah, on the way out. If you got a layover or something.
Yeah. I'm saying that, and I'm also, I actually, I'm going to go so far as to say that if you don't have some degree of middle split, you're really missing out.
Yep.
I think you're going to have back pain.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, you need like, well, what percentage we consider this 100% and standing zero? What percentage would you say? If you want to get really mathematical, we could do
what
zero
is it,
and 180. But
I think the way I've heard it measured before is the 7 or 8 step, meaning you're taking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 out with your feet and then be able to still keep hips below knees. I think that's a pretty good measure.
That is highly unscientific, but
it okay. is. It's but it's going to be relative to your proportions. But
that's why it's highly unscientific.
But it's better than like I've. So I would say, but you got to measure feet apart, right? Because that's really what the measurement is for how, but the distance is going to be different because people's legs are different.
No, I'm just talking like depth. Like, what do you think? Like, so let's say somebody's listening right now and they're like, well, I can maybe get to like,
if full
like
standing
a
is 100%
super deadlift kind of position. Yeah, like
so
what,
feet together,
what's the depth that I should be able to get to with the middle splits at to consider myself at the bare minimum.
Degrees of bend out from the hip, starting with feet together, like standing straight up as being like 100% extended. And then moving out in a radius, you're basically looking at the, at eventually getting to the, essentially the 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock positions for the legs. Maybe where should your feet be in the,
yeah, exactly.
In the clock that is your
yeah, what,
pelvis.
What degree? So like, let's say that somebody gets to 90 degrees, right?
And which is splits. Full, yeah, full, yeah, you're like that, but well,
it's just a V.
90,
it's
yeah.
a V. If a v. It, let's just flip the person upside down,
okay.
The ground's up top.
And we'll
down.
Say 180
so
is full,
they're
full 90,
split. 180 is a full split. So, and they're like, I can get to 90, and that's where I say, is that a good enough bare minimum?
No.
No. I feel like 90 is like bare this. Minimum to be.
Athletic.
And yes. I wouldn't, and what I'm yeah. saying even further is that I wouldn't even, I would count the measure as the degree of split with the hips underneath the knees now. Because I think that that really shows.
Yeah.
So bring it in, Colin. Let's see if you can get it. So
yeah,
Colin's going to demo here. All right, a little lower because your hips, bring your feet in closer together. Bring your feet in a little bit closer
Boots,
together.
Bro.
A little bit
Boots.
More.
That's
feet awesome. Feet in just a little bit more.
Boots.
The feet in just a little bit more, sir. All right, good. Now chest upright. And that's
yeah.
going to increase the load. Not bad. So I think that's near acceptable. Yeah. So that's what? How many? What?
No.
But see, this
yeah,
changes greatly
like
because
10.
He's going in. When he sits down, it's completely different than being in that straddle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think this is going to, I think that'll change the angles. The degree, how far your feet are apart. So that angle.
What? Yeah,
just
I guess. Yeah,
and then
you guys
the,
are thinking
and then the
squat. Horse stance. And I was thinking
just
a
the squat.
True split.
A true split,
which is straight legs, so
that you can hold. I mean, anything that's close to like, you know, probably.
I think she's got to be above 90,
yeah.
right?
I think it's got to be close to like
just start
130.
Yeah,
I
would agree.
130, 130 degrees. 130
is
gotta
where
be
I
your,
feel pretty strong. I think after, but
like that's your minimum.
Yeah, I'm going to say that.
We need a pendulum. So I'm sure there's a math.
A split math?
Yes, you just hang like a belt with a ball and you just measure the time.
That's
it takes.
That Chinese Qigong stuff.
Yeah, that's intense stuff there. That takes years of training before you're hanging weights from
that's
that.
That's loaded progressive stretching for sure.
Someone needs to give us a protractor for that.
I would say I'd that like I would personally feel like it's reasonable and athletic for someone to go to a to work towards a middle split that's somewhere between 8 and 12 inches off the ground, like pelvis from the ground, glutes from the ground in the middle split.
What if you're like 12 feet tall?
Yeah, I really don't. I don't think it matters. Because what really matters,
the angle is completely different. Yeah, the longer the legs are.
The height.
That's why I think
your butt and the ground
degrees
vary.
Yeah, I'm talking about distance between the butt and the ground because I think that a lot of this has to do with, like hip flexion and the extension, like the abduction of the leg. Mm-hmm. I think that you're defending against. I think if you get that low, you have a really broad range of strength. That probably means the rest of your, you know, lumbar, pelvis, glutes, groin are in a, and if you can hold that under load, meaning that's why I think that has to be a thing too, is you have to be able to hold that for like 15 to, you know, 30 seconds or something to show that you actually have to control that range of strength. If you have that, the chances that you slip out on something, or that there's some greater benefit you're missing through pelvic mobility when you're in a bottom of a squat, there's probably no deficit. Like most of the athletes that I've seen who, or even in martial arts who've done a lot of kicking and whatnot, who can at least get there, rarely have other sorts of pelvis problems. And I really don't. I don't have a ton either of pelvis problems. A little bit of hip flexor tension. And when you require more than that, then think about anything. Think about like a step out to the side and a slip on wet grass or ice or even just someone's gross sweat on the air track. You know, it's like, right? That's going to send you out and the chances. And then, you know, if you ever want to kick,
yeah,
for any reason, that range helps. And when we don't do that, it actually just, we're making those accommodations for range in our spine somewhere, right? So if you're going to do a flip and you kick out of a flip, but you don't have, like, you know, good mobility, you're going to round at the back and you're just going to have to make that work in other ways that put you more at risk.
Yep.
It's kind of insurance.
Yeah, it is definitely. I mean, any self-respecting athlete will know that like mobility work is going to be like, it's going to pay dividends in the long run, right? It's not like you're going to work on splits and suddenly you like magically perform better the next day or something like that. But it is, it's insurance on the long term that you're not going to have any sort of, you know.
So I like
recurring injuries.
I like the range of strength stuff by Flexible on his name's Jeff. I forget his last name. He has a program podcast. But his whole thing is he lifts. He likes strength. But and this is more of an Eastern approach too. Is just that what you can load onto you is as important, if not, it's more important that you can also load that weight through your full range of strength. So mobility training becomes strength training, and through that mindset. And I like that better because it gives some lateral progression for strength training aside from just like, I'm going to put another plate on my back.
Yeah.
Because we all know that there's a big difference between, like, Jesse has a very beautiful ATG back squat, right? Mm-hmm. Ars to grass, right? Very beautiful back squat. If someone tries to acquire that additional range in their back squat, but they have not been training to do that under load, for all practical purposes, it's a new movement, mm-hmm. because that range has just never been under load. So you're taking stuff all the way to the bottom and further. And even if they gain mobility, if they don't do that while loading it at the same time, they load on the new weight, they can injure themselves because they're not used to taking that load under that further bottom. So what we mean by that is when you go into yours, then you're loading your PRs, your personal records, with the most weight you can lift all the way through your complete end range of motion, which mm-hmm. for you is, you could pretty much take a break at the bottom, right?
Yeah.
You sit down, and if you had to, you just stay. You're at the end range of motion. You're upright. Chest is upright. Hips are open. And you're sitting, essentially, with your hamstrings compressed to your calf, right?
It's actually, like, my favorite way to, like, warm up for back squats is to just throw like 135 pounds on there and just go to the bottom
and sit. I've done it before too. And then the most obnoxious thing, I was doing it at a Globo gym and people kept asking me if I needed help.
that's why if I had to do it at a Globo gym, I would absolutely have my phone in front of me so that people are like, oh, he's just hanging out down there. Because yeah, otherwise it looks like they're like, does this guy
need a spot? I had someone come and pull the bar off my back at the Fort Collins Club, or not Fort Collins Club, Old Town.
Low tech,
yeah. Because I had my headphones on, I wasn't listening, right? Because I was like, and also like, bro, what the?
Bro, you need help, bro.
Because I was in the squat rack, so he just pulled it off and then put it on the safety bars. I thought you were stuck.
And you're like under 95 pounds?
Yeah, come on, bro.
Dude, that's what I do love people in the gym. As annoying as it is when someone tries to give you advice, this accounts for just parkour techniques as well. Like, everyone feels like they just want to share the like secret thing that they have, or they're just always looking for a moment to like help someone else out. It, in terms of physical activity, it feels like people are really giving in that way. Sometimes I don't think it's coming from the right place, but
maybe ego.
Yeah, but it does. It's kind of nice that someone like sees you there and is like, I'm not gonna assume this guy's stuck in that position.
Right.
He doesn't know what to do. I'm gonna go help him out. It's annoying for someone who's.
But imagine that as a facility. So think of this mindset, because I've kind of worked for some of those gyms before, and it literally is this sort of feral experiment. It's like a reality TV show. We're just gonna let people swipe their cards, and they're gonna come in, and whatever happens, happens. Right. With all these different arts and different relationships that exist on the floor, and it's like, man, you throw a shower in the mix. She's crazy. So, yeah, I would feel that way. I think that this is also another little hack up here with the seatbelt hack that I've recently worked on, is that if I'm really lazy and I'm trying to work on, let's say, something like pancake split, where I'm working on that groin and glute and high hamstring flexibility, and I don't want to spend a bunch of casual time listening to a podcast in order to warm up my pancake to do my strength work in it. And the pancake is, you guys, is when your legs are straddled, you're sitting on the ground, then you lean the pelvis forward and you flatten out, right? I will just do a set of, like 135 back squats. Because when I mindfully go to the bottom, every rep opens up very quickly the pelvis. So that's my little like pancake split hack too. So I wonder how many people are doing that. Because this is, again, is with the back squat. If you had the mindset of, I care about range of strength, not just what the numbers are I'm putting up.
Yeah.
It changes the dimensions of how you train.
Well, yeah, I think that's a big thing. Because I admittedly don't, I don't do horse stance. I don't do a ton of pancake, except at night when I'm kind of bored. In which case, I still prefer legs up the wall because it's lazier. but I do a ton of back squats, right? And I always do them with that mentality of the maximum amount of range I can with the most amount of weight that I can handle for that range of motion. But yeah, I would wager that, give me a couple minutes to warm up and I could probably hit 160 degrees in a split, in the middle splits without ever having to work on it, right? But I don't think most people are training their weightlifting with that same mentality.
They aren't, but I think that's going to shift, because the longevity of training for load is not sustainable. I mean, some people do it, but it's very mindful, and you always have to stay within that realm of what you're comfortable with. Because if you train back squat for 30 years to a certain degree, and then on the 31st year decide, I'm going to go down another 4 inches.
But how are you going to go down another?
Because a lot of people, when they do back squats, are stopping for what counts.
Oh, you mean not the hip crease below knees. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They're not even doing that. Like, you go to, speaking of Globo gyms, you're going to see quarter squat, curtsy squats all day long.
Like, stopping epidemic. At that hip crease and knees, that's so much harder. Like, when you're under heavy loads, you load up 300 pounds there, and trying to stop at that point and not go lower is so hard. I'm like, just lower the whole thing to the bottom, come all the way to the top. It's very simple.
Yeah, but there's no degree of honesty there. Because people were loading the weight on that they lifted in high school, at least they remember lifting, which probably wasn't true either.
I do think that in some degree, though, some people just don't have the range of motion yet to get there, right? So
it's, yeah.
I think
it's,
a you would suggest that if that's not your range of motion for a back squat, then horse stance would be a really great way for you to gain that extra range of motion. And then when you go back to the squat rack to experiment with lighter weights, of course, for that full range.
Yeah, and if you're doing isometric contraction in the horse stance for 15, 30 seconds a minute, which you should be, I think any decent athlete, let's talk about that. How long should you be able to sit in a proper horse stance as a decent and well-prepared, you know, athlete or mover to say that you have some confidence in it? Like, at what point is it a deficit?
Well, yeah, lower dominant athlete. I would imagine if you're a, you know, like a pitcher or something, you probably don't need to.
Non-specialized.
I'm just saying, if you squat. Use the term athlete as like.
Let's say you back squat, you cleaned a back squat. Then you should probably be able to horse stance for some degree if you're doing it right. So yeah. What do you think like this?
I don't know, because last time I did horse stance was probably years ago.
At least 30 seconds.
Yeah, 30 seconds, 30 a minute seconds, probably. Got
it, yeah. Are you 20 to 30 seconds with my kiddos?
That's lower than I was expecting.
Well, I mean.
I was expecting like a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll tell, right, you can tell right away when something like the second, like 5 seconds in, you'll be able to tell.
If they are
in a deficit there.
It's like L-sits. Like when you get in an L-sit, you can tell somebody hasn't done an L-sit in a while and they just immediately start like.
Yeah, so you get the little cockroach, like, the dying cockroach shake.
Oh, really? I feel like if you can get an L-sit and shake, you're better than 90% of the people.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Cool. Yeah, okay. That's fair. That's okay. Yeah. Just can you get in?
Or how about a better example is support hold on the rings.
Yep.
Right? You get into support hold on the rings and almost everybody starts doing this thing like immediately, right? But people who have done ring work in some moderate capacity will jump up there and you'll see them hold this position pretty stable for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They even like to swing in that position.
Yeah.
Be like Iron Man.
That's great. Yeah, so I guess the key message that I would want people to take listening now is just, if you haven't already, open your mind to lateral progressions of strength, which means deeper range of motion, which means not just thinking about putting up the numbers, but also thinking about the intention of the movement and even the shape. Like if you're going, I'm not obsessed with what the shape of a squat should look like, because we can see strongmen lifting up these ridiculous stones and, I don't know, sheep in Ireland or something like that, and just having the most rounded, awkward posture ever, but they're familiar with that mm-hmm. range of motion.
Because they've trained
progressively
in that exact range of motion.
Correct. Yeah. This is where being obsessed with having a perfect midline can hurt you, because you're always like very strong and perfect in that position, and then you come out of it for any reason under load and there's no variation. You've just hyper specialized one particular position, looking for them gains there. But
when you put yourself more at risk, because we don't exist in those positions, right? We don't live our life or play our sports or play with our kids in those positions, right? Mm-hmm. Like you're always in some sort of funky position. So yeah, absolutely, training full range of motion under some progressive load, whether it be horse stance and splits or L-sit or planche, these things should be incorporated in your training
routine, right? I agree. Any other tips for back squats? So how did you build up your back squat, Jesse? You've got a pretty good back squat. You don't have a traditional powerlifting background. You're parkour to the core. So how did you build your back squat? What was your rep sequence? What did the story look like?
I think it's been like 3 years, maybe 4 years that I've been like regularly doing strength training like year round, like cyclical strength and power training. And honestly, I could definitely pull up all of my programming back then, but it's all like trial and error. And if I'd redo it, I'd change a ton of stuff.
Mm.
But for the most part, it's just doing something related to that movement, right? So like back squats for me have always been like, there's a minimum 2 times a week I will do back squat. Right. That's just it. Anything on top of that is like a beneficial. And the reason for the back squat, it doesn't have to be that same for everybody, but back squat translates the best to parkour and the sports that I enjoy. So that's why that's the one.
Now add on to that. When I originally was training back squats, like my mentors and coaches had me training front squat, high bar back squat and low bar back squat separately, and the foot positions were different. Mm-hmm. In parkour, it seems like, you tell me, have you experimented with bringing your feet in closer? Because it just seems to me like it might be better off for the parkour athlete, who I think is the more natural athlete, to keep their feet closer together, whereas some traditional strength coaches would want you in that almost nearly a horse stance back squat.
Yeah, like shoulders right? just outside shoulder width or shoulder width.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would absolutely, if you have the ankle dorsiflexion, I would recommend that you bring your feet in closer.
So you're not dumping the weight back, right? The tail yeah. doesn't round out, you don't dump the weight back.
Yeah, like the closer you are as a parkour athlete on the back squat would probably translate the better, because that's where we jump from. We almost always jump from this like foot together or like, you know, one fist distance between our feet. But the truth is, like, if you don't have the ankle dorsiflexion for that, and you're an adult, you're not going to get it. So you just have to pick the narrowest that you can. I'm absolutely not this like super narrow, because I just don't have that ankle dorsiflexion. So it's a matter of, I also would recommend doing front squat rather than back squat, but you have to find what's the most efficient route. In order for me to be able to do the same amount of weight and get the same stimulus in that foot position on a front squat will take me years of work. And I'm like, I got stuff to do, a life right. to live, and I want to have fun. So it's high bar instead, and it's slightly wider. It's probably two fisties.
It's our deadlift yeah. position.
Yeah, for almost me, because that's position. The most efficient position mm-hmm. for me. It's the narrowest I can get without having to spend a ton of time and energy trying to eke out an extra half inch on dorsiflexion on my ankles.
It's also closer to the movement in parkour at precision jumps.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I do think
and that. 2 foot jumping.
The fisty, too. Like one fist between the feet. So if you take your feet, for those of you listening, if you take your feet and you kind of like stand up, and then you make a fist and put a fist in between the knuckle of your big toe, that's kind of like where you would jump in precision from. So
I like that conversation, because I think I personally believe that's the ideal precision position, both for takeoff and for landing, for yeah. jump position, for takeoff and landing, even though there are circumstances where you want to be able to like get hit narrow landings, right? We want to have the competence, at least in short or mid-range, to be able to stick precisions with your feet touching almost.
Yeah. But jumping that way, if you think about your hips, right? So you want them to be straight, because that's going to be the most direct translation. But if your feet go in, you now actually have an angle that goes out. So you actually end up dumping some power when you're jumping from feet together because of that.
I would agree. So,
and because we jump, we don't, in lifting or in some sort of strength where your foot's flat, that actually would help you because the feet are in and you're actually able to generate more torque, right? Because you have essentially a bigger windup. Mm. So you have this outside angle coming narrow. But in jumping, that doesn't work for you because your heel's off the ground. So torque's pretty irrelevant when you're standing on one point on each foot, which is the ball of the foot. So it wouldn't benefit you in that case.
But I also think there may be a little too much hate on natural valgus, like the knees coming in a little bit. Yep. I think that, yeah, I mean, if we look at pro players and stuff, and I've had some other people expose this idea before too, but I just remember in martial arts, like when I trained wushu, like it was normal to train internal rotation to the drop, to the ground. Like it was not, you weren't trying to, you know, do the heaviest thing in that position, but it was standard to collapse the knee in internal rotation and the foot would be flat until the knee actually hit the ground. And then, and you would load that in stance work. And I think what that helped me with was prepare my knees for internal rotation. But I think
that's gonna happen. Yeah.
I think that the fitness community now is just like any freaking deviation from absolute external rotation in the knee. I think it's gone too far. Like I've experienced more pain from trying to never let my knees come in than I ever did from having a little bit of valgus in a jump or in landing or something like that. It might just be
a thing to grow it. Yeah, I think on if we were to take height drops,
yeah, I think the one fist is
and
good.
Go into valgus yeah. upon the landing like immediately, then yeah
probably don't want to do that.
Ooh. Right, but yeah, I mean, like if you're running, you're running a line and you hit a tack to change directions, your knee's not going to be externally rotated on a tack, right? It's actually going to be pretty parallel and your femur may actually end up kind of coming up just a bit. It's not going to kill you.
You should be able to handle it.
Not you should be able to handle it.
If your yeah. freaking meniscus shoots out of your mouth because of that.
like the alien coming out of your stomach. Yes. Like your meniscus is reaching out.
That's a problem. Like, you probably need to be a little bit.
Those 90-90 sits are nice for that. If you have, like, knee issues.
Yeah, I actually feel like those knee injuries are from people changing the direction that they're running, too. Whereas I feel like if you're collapsing and it's just vertical, I feel like it's something that you're pretty used to, whether you're lifting, you're squatting, or you're jumping.
Mm.
But I feel like
my hips are stacked over knees.
Yeah, yep. I feel like the direction, yeah, that impact is a little more formal or formalized for your knee. But then when you're doing quick cuts, like on the grass, when those knee injuries happen a lot, that angle is a little bit, it's going to be quite a bit different. And it's going to be something I feel like that knee's not quite ready for. But that's when I see it, is when people, you see it in kicking and tricking, that you're moving laterally, right?
Yep.
And so I think that, and plus a little bit of torque on the knee from the twisting, and that's when I'll feel that if I land bad. So.
Yeah, that lateral stability could be trained more in parkour as a drill. There's probably some good drills for that. And then also I think the lateral stability of the ankle has a lot too. Mm-hmm. When you get in there, we're pretty good at forwards and backwards, but a lot of athletes miss that. Like most of my sprints have been lateral.
Point, actually, that like ankle.
Ankle, yep. And so why I've trained. What I've done to kind of help that a little bit is I train overhead squat and I try and work in my overhead squats to get my feet together to where I'm doing overhead squat with the like tight precision position. I mean, feet are touching, then going into that full position. And I've had to work up to that. That was not something that
came naturally. That's a pretty cool position if you can get there.
And I think, but I feel that one actually does affect my ankles too. Like I'm actually, I feel it the most actually in strengthening the lateral side of my ankle, the exterior side, when I'm at the bottom of that. That's the what it'll get me. And that may just be years of scar tissue from jacking on my ankles, or if there might actually be some sort of benefit to that.
Keep us tuned on that experiment.
Yeah, so I would love to have the most badass ankles. I think if I could, I think before I go for the robot legs, I'd probably end up going for the pretty happy with my legs and knees. My ankles, I'm kind of like,
I think if you go for robot leg, you kind of have to replace the.
You want the whole thing?
You gotta replace the whole thing. You can't have like robot femur and have human ankles. That's just a recipe for shattering.
Start from the ground up.
Yeah, you definitely gotta replace the ankle and feet, and then up to the knee, then.
That's what I was thinking. Like, just do like
you where, just do ankle.
Yeah. Right, tib fib to titanium. Maybe? Yeah. Are you thinking the tib fib's too like subpar as a bone structure? Just go all the way up to the knee.
Well, then you gotta do the knee too. So that's what I'm saying. It's like you might as well just do the whole leg, just
straight to hip.
Straight to hip.
Hooch. Man.
I would just love more ankle flexion. Would love it.
I'm pretty sure if you're willing to suffer, you could probably ask a doctor to shave
off. Yeah.
Oh, you think you have the bone block thing?
I just know that.
I don't know the technical term for that. Pathologist. I don't even know if it's a pathologist.
Ryan had, right? Ryan from
the yeah, US, and a couple of people have had it. We've had Kurt had it, Ryan had it, and also our coach, I swear another coach had it. Can't remember who it was off the top of my head. But yeah, can't, because there's actually bone in the way.
It just doesn't go over. Just freaking doesn't go
bones. Far. God. Always in the way.
Right?
But anyways, thanks for tuning in, guys. Appreciate you listening. If you are watching us on YouTube, hello. Wave hello, guys.
Oh, it's a holiday, too. So, wish a happy holiday.
I guess you didn't even know. I guess actually when this drops, it will be a holiday. So,
mm-hmm.
Hey, happy holidays. Merry Christmas, Kwanzaa, whatever holiday you celebrate, they're all friggin' awesome. I don't care, just have fun. Be merry and celebrate that the end of 2020.
Yes. Bittersweet, 2020.
Yeah.
But if you're watching us, you can listen to us on any of your major podcast platforms, and if you are listening to us, please tune in every now and then on the YouTube channel and see our faces. Thanks so much. Leave a comment, like, subscribe, all that. You know,
ask us about them. These squat questions. I feel like some of you might already have some of these things and unrealized strengths.
Absolutely. And the comment section is always open. So please, if you got questions about anything or if you got comments, let us know. We'd love to hear. Thanks so much. Catch you next time.